What you're about to experience is one man's quest to see beyond the tumultuous period we're in and to envision what lies just beyond our grasp, yet well within our reach. Welcome to Larry Rifkin's America Trends, where the future has arrived, and it's just in time.
Welcome back to America Trends Podcast. I'm Larry Rifkin. And John and I have told you many times that our podcast comes from the state of Connecticut. So we're not in New York or Los Angeles or Washington, D.C., where it's easy to say to a guest, hey, come on by and sit in the studio with us. But I can tell you that John and I love it when we have guests right here in studio. And sometimes we are able to get people who are in Connecticut for one reason or another. Oftentimes they're in Connecticut because they're involved with a learning institution like Yale University. And we have that honor during this podcast because you're going to meet a woman by the name of Patricia Russo. Now, she is the head of a really interesting women's campaign school at Yale. And Yale's right down the road from us, about 15 miles from here. And she's been involved in Connecticut public life for many years. And she's translated all those skills into preparing women, old and young, Democrats and Republicans, white, Hispanic, and black, to become participants in the rough and tumble of elective politics. And many women have not really wanted to be the front runner, the person out front in these campaigns. They've been working on campaigns, they've been fundraisers, activists for many years, but more are coming forward. And I've got to say that one of the reasons they're coming forward in huge numbers this year is thanks to Donald J. Trump. You talk about unintended consequences. He might lead to some real reforms in this country, arousing women in a way he never had in mind, trust me. Patricia joins us in studio to discuss her program and what we can expect from women coming forward to run for office in the years ahead. Joining us on America Trends is Patricia Russo. She is the executive director of the Women's Campaign School at Yale, just down the road from where it is that we do our podcast. Thank you for coming in today.
My pleasure, Larry. Thank you for inviting me.
Well,
on Valentine's
Day.
What a sweetheart you are, Larry.
You are really in the center of it, the epicenter of activity in terms of political trends in America, women getting involved in politics and campaigns, not only behind the scenes, but putting themselves out as candidates. So what do you say about this time?
I say it's our time, Larry. That's what I say. I have been in this business for over 30 years now. It's been an explosion of amazing women stepping up, finding their voice, and saying, wow, it's my time. I'm going to make my time, and I'm ready to run for office. It's really been like no other time I've ever experienced. It's really exhilarating.
And when people do see women getting involved today or in the recent past, I mean, what has the perception been? That this is somebody who is really stepping away from the crowd, and let's give her a listen, or this is an anomaly? What have we looked upon women as political candidates as being?
Well, what we have seen historically is that there have just too few women running for office. And at the Women's Campaign School at Yale, you know, we do nonpartisan, issue-neutral political campaign training for women, which means you can be a Democrat, Republican, unaffiliated, independent, Green Party, Purple Party.
Communist.
Anybody.
Yes.
We just need more critical mass. We need more women running and winning, right? So in the past, women were kind of an anomaly. You know, it's like, wow, look, there's a woman running. You know, we want many women running for the same seat, right? We want that competition. You know, we want that energy because women bring different things to the mix when they run for public office.
And when they come to you, to the Women's Campaign School, what are they normally looking for? What are they most concerned that they have a deficit in? Is it fundraising, networking? The old boy network has excluded them. What are they normally saying to you?
The women who come to our five-day intensive, it's gotten very competitive, which is the good news. We're getting more and more women interested, excited. So the numbers have grown exponentially, certainly in the past 2 years. And I really want to talk about that in a few minutes, Larry. So the culture is changing, which has really been phenomenal. So the women who are interested in our five-day intensive already have a foundation in and have a political background, right? So they've either run for office and are serving on a local capacity, or they've run and they've lost and they're getting ready for another run and they want to make sure they win next time. So what are the panoply of issues and skill sets that they need to run an effective, successful campaign? Our campaign school is all about training, right? The nuts and bolts that you need to run an effective, successful campaign. So in addition to women who are interested in running for office, you know, and the majority of the women who attend our school are women who are running for office. The other part of our program is for women who are interested in campaign management. Because when you look at the number of women who are managers in campaigns, you think of two women. You think of Donna Brazile on the Democratic side, and you think of Kellyanne Conway on the Republican side, and then we're in free fall. So we just don't have enough critical mass on the campaign management side as well. Ideally, we love it when a woman is thinking about running for office and she has identified a woman who's going to be her campaign manager to come together to the school for the 5 days. That's kind of the sweet spot. You know, years ago, Elizabeth Esty, a congresswoman from our fifth congressional district here, did just that. Her daughter, Sarah, ran her campaign. And so the two of them came together to the school.
Well, I remember her telling the story that her daughter said, "You're so opinionated. Why don't you run for office?" Mm-hmm. And I've got to tell you, she's become a very skillful politician over the years. When do you know that someone's really got the makings of a candidate?
Let me tell you about our experience this past year, because it was illuminating for me. And again, since I've been at this for a while, it takes a lot for me to discover something new and interesting. So it really started right after the presidential election results 2016, where we started to get more and more calls and emails from women. "When's your 5 day? I'm outraged. I've got to do something." So we're seeing and feeling this new energy and this new civic engagement, this, you know, wonderful excitement about civic engagement we've not seen in a long time. So I started returning those phone calls and emails. And then we really saw the surge and felt the surge after that first International Women's March, right, in January of last year. And we started getting calls that Sunday, Larry. So the day after the march, I'm mad. I marched. I want to run for office. I started returning those calls, and the calls went something like this. "Oh, yeah, I'm mad. I marched. I want to run for office. I've had it. I've got to do something." "Oh, great. Thanks so much for calling. Where are you registered to vote?" "Oh, I'm not registered to vote." "You're not registered to vote, but you think you're running for office." So 1/3 of all the women who contacted us, Larry, after the first march weren't even registered to vote. The second third were registered to vote, but didn't vote in the presidential, the 2016 presidential, because the two candidates were so very much the same to them that they really couldn't decide which one to vote for. So 2/3 of the women who contacted us initially were not ready for a 5-day intensive at Yale Law School. And so what we did was, right after that, we started raising money so that we could create a whole new level of training called the Women's Campaign School at Yale, the Basics, which is a 1-day intensive for women who have a newly discovered passion for politics, but don't have the foundation or the skill set they need to launch an effective, successful political career.
What do they think coming in that they have or don't have? Are most of them worried about public speaking or policy development or going out and ask somebody for money? What are they most skittish about at the beginning or uncertain of?
The number one reason why women don't run is the fundraising. The fundraising is daunting, Larry. When you think about having to raise $25,000 for a local race or $10 million for a relatively uncontested U.S. Senate race, those numbers are just unbelievable for women. And we talk a lot about the different paths that a woman takes versus a man when they think about running for office.
Well, explain that to us. Do you suggest that they start at a local office? Or what if they have their ambitions set on a federal office immediately, and you might know that that's just a little bit beyond their skill set at the moment? They need to build on what they do have.
Well, it never occurs to a man, Larry, that they are not prepared to run for president of the United States. Okay? Just never.
I think we have an example.
Never.
Of that.
I think we have many. Okay? So it never occurs to a man that he's not ready for the top office. Most of the time, he's not. Okay? But men just don't have that mindset. Women, we never feel that we're enough. Okay? And so what we suggest to women is come and spend the day with us. Because by the end of our one-day training, you will have a sense of all that you need to know to run successfully. And that will determine, do I want to serve on the local level? Do I want to serve the state level? Am I ready for a congressional race? By the end of that day, you will know where you're best suited to serve.
And do most people accept whatever evaluation they may self-impose or that you may place on them by saying, well, I think you did a great job at this, or I think given what you've said to me, this really might suit you a little bit better? Are they fully aware of where they are, do you think, a good self-awareness?
I think that knowledge is power, and I think that the more information and skills you have and you learn, the more effectively you'll be able to make those decisions about where you should slate yourself. What I'm having a challenge with right now are women who called me last year wanting to know more about the 5-day, and then for whatever reason, they couldn't make it work, so they didn't apply. So now they're running for Congress, and their hair's on fire, Larry, because everything that I told them were going to be kind of the rookie expensive mistakes, the pitfalls, are happening to them. And that's when I want to be wrong. You know, that's when I don't want to be right. But that's why, you know, this is an expensive business. You know, politics is expensive. You want to be smart about it. And that's what's so extraordinary about our training.
Well, I'm reading that about 390 women are planning to run for the House of Representatives, which is higher than at any point in U.S. history. You've got 22 who are non-incumbent black women. I know a lot of black women are entering your program. Mm-hmm. So how well are these campaigns going at this early point? Or it's not that early, really, in the process for 2018.
It's really dependent upon the money. You know, everyone's for campaign finance reform in America, yet we don't seem to have it. For a variety of different reasons, right? So it's really about the money. It's about the endorsements. It's about, you know, the groundswell that you can create, the support that you're getting early on.
But given where we are today with the Me Too movement, mm-hmm. and many things that have gone on with the Trump administration, there is a level of motivation where people are saying, I'm not waiting my turn mm-hmm. any longer. Mm-hmm. This is my time. And they're challenging incumbents within their own party. Mm-hmm. They're challenging incumbents in the other party mm-hmm. who are longstanding mm-hmm. and have family backgrounds that are enormous. Mm-hmm. They seem to be fearless. Is that true?
They're fearless, and being fearless and having a passion is certainly something that you need to run an effective campaign, but it's not everything. It's just the beginning. The techniques, the skills, in order to effectively fundraise, to get in a how to craft a compelling message. What we say to our graduates all the time is, remember, it's not about you. This is not about you. You're the conduit for your constituents. It's about them and what's on their minds. And so when a prospective candidate will come to me and say, these are my top three issues, this is what I'm passionate about, get over yourself. If your constituent, that doesn't reflect your constituency, you're not going to be successful. If they don't care about these issues that you care about, don't run.
Now, your school started well ahead of the Me Too movement,
yes.
well ahead of Donald Trump.
Yes.
How much has it changed? Explain what the impetus was at the beginning and what it is today.
Well, the impetus was, it was the beginning of It was our first year of the woman here in America, 1992. You might be old enough to remember that year of the woman.
Well, there were four women, I think, at that time elected to the U.S. Senate,
yes.
I believe, in 1992.
Yes. So it was a very exciting year. And it was a very exciting year for me here on the ground in Connecticut because there were so many amazing women running for Congress, both on the Democratic and Republican side. That was the year that Carol Moseley Braun, first African-American woman to ultimately serve in the United States Senate, was running. And all these women were coming to Connecticut to fundraise, Larry, because that's when, you may recall, we were flush. So everyone was coming to Little Connecticut to raise money for their campaigns.
Well, a lot of people still are.
Yes,
some
people are still
flush.
That's true. That's true.
Others have been flushed.
Right.
Go
right.
on. Yes.
So many of those women ran that year, 1992, and won. So a group of us who have been very active politically on both sides of the aisle were just kind of feeling pretty great about the results and thinking, wow, we've leveled the playing field now because we see so many more women in Congress. We're going to see more women running. 1993 happened. It was as if 1992 was aberration. You know, it was something that really didn't happen. So a woman by the name of Andre Alian Brooks from Westport, Connecticut, was really the woman who had the dream, the big vision that maybe there are challenges that women face as candidates that men don't even have to think about. And maybe they need a political campaign school that is all focused on skills, not public policy, that has an international component, that is truly nonpartisan, truly issue neutral. So you don't have to be pro or con something to attend our school, and just give them the skills to skew them for success. And that's really how it started.
I remember
started
her,
with Andre.
By the way.
Yeah.
And she had many different interests, a wonderful woman. We'll return to this episode of America Trends in just a moment. If you like what we're doing here at America Trends Podcast, please don't keep it to yourself. I know there are a lot of people, John, who think, well, if I'm listening and somebody else wants to listen at the same time, maybe we're going to collide and they're not going to be able to hear us.
Yeah.
Is that the way the technology works?
No, there's plenty of bandwidth. Everybody can listen at the same time.
All
so
right. Well, that
sure
dispels
that
myth. Now, you can do a number of things that would really be helpful to us. You could give us a kind rating or a review at Apple Podcasts, and that boosts what they consider to be our value and visibility. And what does that do, John?
Well, that puts us in the forefront so that you can find us easier, and most important is other people can find us easier.
And you can subscribe there or on our site, americatrendspodcast.com, or wherever you're listening, so we can alert you to new episodes of the podcast, which, by the way, we put out twice a week on Tuesdays and Thursdays. And stay in touch with us on both Facebook and Twitter at Trends Podcast. Or you can like us on Facebook or follow us where, John?
On Twitter.
On Twitter.
Yeah.
That's right. Where the world turns to hear fake news or whatever
yeah.
it is. Well,
not
you can
us,
direct
though. We
message
have
us
real news.
At Trends Podcast or using hashtag Trends Podcast. And you know, John, with our growing audience, and really it's been pretty remarkable, a lot of people just came to us the last month or two and they might have missed earlier episodes. Can they get them again?
They can look through them and pick the ones they want to listen to. They're all on the website, and a lot of them are up on iTunes, many of them.
All right. Well, listen, there's lots of material to listen to. We hope you have the time, and we'll lend it to us because we try to make it worth your while. And thanks so much for listening.
And tell your friends.
We now return to this episode of America Trends. Well, you're a nonpartisan campaign school, yet the energy that I'm seeing on the Democratic side of the aisle is women, generally more progressive, angry and upset with what's going on, are challenging even liberal white male incumbents in many cases. So when people come to your school, some are Republicans, mm-hmm. some are Democrats. Mm-hmm. What divides them more? Is it their politics, or does the fact that they're women unite them more than divide them?
I think what makes us special and unique is that, you know, we have become so paralyzed in our country. Democrats and Republicans don't have the opportunity to talk anymore. I'm old enough to remember I worked years ago on Chris Stodds, and I was working for Chris Shays at the same time, so that was kind of fun.
A Democrat and a Republican.
And a Republican, exactly. I've always been bipartisan. So I was working for Chris Dodd on his first U.S. Senate race. And when he won, I remember going down to meet him in D.C. for a meeting. And I walk into the Senate dining room, and there he's sitting with his two best friends from the United States Senate, Teddy Kennedy and Bob Dole. Larry, you would never see that. It's not allowed. It's just, and so it was a very different kind of, again, culture, very collaborative. Let's talk. Let's talk and see where we can find some common ground. So that's what we bring to our school, in that our women are not only receiving exemplary skills from the best in the business on both sides of the aisle, but they're learning how to work together. They're learning how to listen to each other. There are women who have attended our school that have said to me, Patty, I've never talked to a Democrat before. I've never talked to a Republican. I've never talked to a union person. And so we are kind of holding them to a higher standard, if you will, that we want them to bring that new culture of collaboration and partnership and listening to the world once we launch them after the 5 days.
So who are your illustrious graduates? Name a couple.
Well, Kirsten Gillibrand is a proud graduate of our school.
And some say she may be running for president.
Some say she is running for president.
Well, do you think she has built up the bona fides to run for president?
Absolutely. I mean, again, Larry, this is a question that is never asked of a man. I mean,
oh,
really?
Oh, no. I ask it of men,
okay,
believe me.
Okay, well, good. Keep
there
asking.
Are many who I don't
and they
think
will tell you, absolutely. Yeah. Of course, absolutely. So Kirsten's a graduate of our school. As I mentioned earlier, Elizabeth Esty is a proud graduate, as well as her daughter on the campaign management side. And former Congresswoman Gabby Giffords from Arizona, not only a graduate of our school, but also served on our board for many years. So we're really, really proud of the quality of our graduates.
So put me through, in about 2 minutes, the 5-day intensive. What is it that I have to prove? What is it I'm going to learn? Mm-hmm. Give us a sense of this.
Well, the thing that is that we tell students coming in, prospective students, will be seating our 24th class in June, is that we mimic the energy of a political campaign, which means you start at 8 o'clock in the morning with us, you're in class at the law school, hearing from phenomenal presenters all day, then we all have dinner together, and then at night, we break them up into their case study groups, so they have a homework, a major homework assignment. So everything that they learn each day is incorporated into the homework. And then at the end of the week, their individual groups are judged by a Democrat and Republican judge. So right away, we know that they're ready to either run or they're ready to lead a campaign. But by the Friday, by the time we launch them, they're good to go.
Now, a candidate, an activist, an operative, all are in your bailiwick, and yet they have very different skill sets. Mm-hmm. What are the unique qualities? Let's say Condi Rice or Madeleine Albright could never have won political office, but could hold high positions. Is this something that you might try to guide somebody into? You say, wow, you're incredible on policy, but I think you might be best in the background consulting, advising, or in some other kind of capacity.
Well, for instance, Larry, when people hear me speak, they say, wow, you should run for office. And I say, no way. There's no way. I'd have to be nice to people I don't like. I'd have to work on issues I don't care about. And I know my lane. My lane is making rock star candidates. I like telling people what to do. I love telling candidates what they're doing well, and more importantly, what they're doing it's a nightmare that needs to be changed.
What happens after they've left you, but they come back to you because Patricia Russo was the guru? She was the woman who started or got involved in this school, has been the executive director for so many years at the Women's Campaign School at Yale. So I've got to go back to her, and I'm floundering now, or I've lost my way. Do they come back to you and try to get back on course?
Well, what we do, again, another component of our school that I'm so proud of that sets us apart, is we have a mentoring program for our graduates, which means that once you leave us the 5 days, We want to stay in touch with you. We have a very active closed Facebook alumni page. When I travel, and I'm traveling more and more as a result of the one-day trainings, I will send a message out to our graduates saying, okay, I'm coming to New York City. If you have good news for me, I'd love to hear from you. But if you are drowning and if you are in trouble, you need to see me. You know, you need to see me. And that's the we have seen in the past, the reason why women bail out when it gets too hard or they have a bad day and they say, wow, this isn't for me, rather than saying, let me war game this with somebody. Okay, let me just talk it out and I'll zoom into plan B and I help them talk about what plan B could be for them. Perfect example, a couple of years ago, we had a phenomenal graduate running for state rep in Michigan. She called me one night, 10 o'clock at night, Larry. This is just an example of the mentoring piece. Patty, my photographer's coming over to take pictures for my brochure tomorrow. I have no family. Call me back. Now it's 10 o'clock at night. I'm in Connecticut. She's in Detroit. What am I going to do for her? I call her back. Okay, what's going on? Well, you know, I'm running against this guy who has the perfect family, you know, perfect wife and two kids and dogs. And I'm sitting here.
You provide that too?
Yeah, no.
Instant family?
No, we don't. But again, being Italian, I feel like they're all my kids. And so I said, I had been working with her, so I knew her family. And I said, well, where are your parents? What are they doing tomorrow morning? She said, well, you know, they're around the corner from me. You know where they live. I said, call them. Get them dressed. They're going to be in your photo shoot tomorrow. Where's your sister? Knowing full well where her sister was upstairs. Give her one of your dresses. She's going to be in your photo shoot tomorrow. You determine, you decide, you dictate what family looks like for you. Again, just shifting the energy, just giving them another idea and another perspective. That's what we do for our graduates.
Have you ever had the case where two of your graduates were running against each other?
Yes, we just had that. We had that in Westport. Did you know that, Larry? Is that
what
you're
asking me the question? No, actually, I didn't. So what do you do?
So we had Melissa Kane, who was running for first selectman in Westport on the Democratic side. Uh-huh. And then we had Jennifer Tooker, a Republican, running for second selectman in Westport. And I'm supportive of both of them. I mean, that's what I just said to them. I said, you know, I'm happy to be in all your pictures. I'm so proud of the both of you. And so I was supportive of both of them. You know, it's not hard. It's just not.
Well, what do women, as you see it, offer as attributes that are needed in today's political environment? Is it about collegiality and collaboration versus confrontation? Oh, is that the biggest thing?
I think that's the number one thing. You know, we are much more collaborative in our leadership style, Larry. We're much more apt to check our egos at the door for the greater good. And I think it's because we come to running for very different reasons than men. You know, men can be, not all men, but many men who decide to run see how beneficial it can be. And they're very transactional in their whole approach to running for office. This is good for me. Women, it's usually for the greater good. And so we're starting out two very different perspectives, right? And I love to use the example of the end of the very first sequester. This was several years ago. The first sequester, Susan Collins, as you know, a Republican from Maine, went to one of her good friends in the Senate, Patty Murray, a Democrat from Washington, and said, are you as tired as I am of going to these finance committee meetings? Nothing's getting done. The clock is ticking. Will you stay up with me tonight and put a draft together that we'll just hand over, you know, in the morning and share and see what happens? That draft became the end to the sequester. That's the power of women being at the table. That's what we bring to leadership.
Well, we're looking now in 2018 at a lot more women entering the political sphere. So I want to ask you, is a vote for a woman seen as a way to shake up the system and challenge the status quo? Or does it take a certain type of woman to stir up that kind of thought process?
I think it's, you know, I think you're seeing women stirring it up. I think you're seeing the kind of woman who's excited and attracted to running right now, that's the kind of woman. And we're seeing it on the Republican side as well. Certainly the Democrats have the motivated, far more motivated base right now, but we're seeing far more independent women wanting to run and far more Republican women saying, I want my party back. And the only way I'm going to get my party back is if I become a leader in my party.
Ironically, was it as much the Tea Party movement beckoning people to get involved in that they didn't have to look for a voice? There were many, many different diverse voices within mm-hmm. that particular movement. Mm-hmm. Or do you really go back to 1992, as you talked about earlier? I mean, for the present day impetus, or is it all Donald Trump right now?
Well, right now, initially, it is all Donald Trump, but I think it's going to get beyond Donald Trump, in that it's not enough to be angry. You have to shift your energy. You have to be hopeful and aspirational in your message. And when you're angry, you can't do that.
And the Tea Party did have a lot of women spawned from that. We think of Michelle Bachmann. Mm-hmm. We think of the woman out of Delaware who was a bit on the fringe. Mm-hmm. She didn't win. Mm-hmm. But there were a lot of women who came out of that movement, too.
And then they all kind of petered out. If you notice, there really wasn't a lot of staying power. And again, it gets back to effective messaging. Is your message resonating? And if it's not, you're not going to last in this business. It's too hard.
When we look at President Trump inspiring women because of either a loathing of him on issues important to women, or is it in part also because he was an outsider, and if he could do it, as I think Oprah has suggested, even though I don't think she's necessarily going to run, then you begin to believe anybody could do it. Mm-hmm. What is it more?
I think it's more the former. I think it's about the outrage over stands on issues that are really motivating women to just say, enough. I've got to take responsibility.
And that anger, how do you turn that into a positive message, which is part of what the campaign school, I would imagine, is attempting to do for mm-hmm. individuals?
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, that is something that we talk extensively about. The first day of our school is effective messaging techniques by our amazing faculty member, Deb Sofield, who's a professional speech coach. And that is something that she delves into, you know, how you shift your message so that you can say, wow, I'm mad about this. And this is how I can make it better. This is what I can bring to the conversation and make it better for my district.
Now, if some of the fuel today for these female candidates is the fact that there's frustration and the Me Too movement is bringing all of that to the fore, how do you work with a candidate to make certain that they're not turning off a lot of men in the audience who want to hear and respond to that message, the Me Too movement, but don't want to be threatened by it in some way?
Mm-hmm. You know, I think that you know, wonderful men, and there are really amazing men out there, and we need men to be partners with women who are launching political campaigns. You know, it's important that they have support from men and women, as a matter of fact. And so we have just found that men are excited about supporting women. The thing about the Me Too movement is that finally women are feeling believed for the first time in the history of our nation. That's a huge, huge shift.
Those who come to your school who are more conservative in their politics, and given that a lot of the fuel today is Donald Trump, now they may not like his brand of conservative politics, but how are they welcomed into it? Because I would imagine that a lot of women on the other side, and we did talk about African-American women who are disproportionately joining the school, that does that concern them? Are they thrown off a little bit?
No, actually, you know, we have our rules for the week. And on Monday, I talked to our class about the way in which we treat each other. Okay, everyone has a responsibility to speak up respectfully. that it is important that you share your opinions, but they're your opinions. And so I have to tell you that in the 23 years, the existence of our school, we just have not had the issues that you refer to. Because women are just, in light of the liberal, conservative tag, I think it's by virtue of the fact that they are divided up into these small case study groups. We throw in Republicans, Democrats, our internationals. So all different kinds of women, right? With all different perspectives. So we really, I think we foster the culture that everyone's voice is equal here. So there's no, for instance, there's no finger pointing. There's no, I'm right, you're wrong. There's none of that.
Do you prepare them to run against an older incumbent or a male incumbent versus a female? How do you, you know, get them ready? Because it really, every campaign is built on the dynamics of the two or three candidates involved.
Mm-hmm. Well, the first thing that we do is we suggest to them that they do opposition research on themselves. What's out there that your opponent will find? And we always say to them, you may think it's deleted, but you know, everything on Facebook and everything in email is just forever. It's out there. So for instance, if you had a, if you had a wild time in college, it's out there. Those photographs are still there, even though you might have deleted them. So first do some opposition research on yourself. So everything that you find, you will have a response to that you feel comfortable and confident in, and do the same thing with your opponent. Really get to know your opponent as well as you know yourself.
And if they are running against, for example, a 13-term Republican, Ed Royce is now being taken on by a woman who is a pediatrician in California, a 2-time cancer survivor. She's got a very different life story than mm-hmm. he does, mm-hmm. but he's got name recognition and the like. When you look at that today, who do you think has the political advantage?
Well, it really depends on the district. I mean, a perfect example is I'm originally from New Jersey. And in my home state, Rodney Frelinghuysen, who's been there forever, has decided not to run. Now, people there say he's decided not to run because all the women in his district who've been marching for 2 years now, every Friday, go to his office, Larry, and have been demanding a meeting with him to talk about issues. And for 2 years, he has stonewalled them. So now he's suddenly decided, after being there, I don't know, 10, 12, you know, he's been there forever, decided it's time to step down. Again, it's a very different climate now.
Absolutely. And in many cases, we are going to see older men with a lot of political experience versus younger women. I hate to see this as a surrogate for some of the debate that we're having today about some of the abuse that has been heaped upon women, but in a sense it will. So what do we look at? Are these campaigns going to get as ugly as many of the male-on-male campaigns mm-hmm. have been over the years? Mm-hmm. How do you see it? I mean, in terms of the tone that some of these campaigns may take on.
Well, I think that for the most part, the majority of the American people are really tired of the ugliness. They're tired of it. And that's why so many people are turned off by politics, because they just say things like they're all alike and they're not doing anything for me. And so I know that our graduates are very, they're just kind of respectful of that. Really want to make sure that they're on message all the time. And it's not about personally attacking your opponent, but attacking him or her on stands on issues that may not be in the best interests of the constituents.
Have you ever been disappointed that you teach that and a lot of people walk out of the class feeling that way, but then they've got a consultant, another consultant, not you, Patricia Russo, who says, look, I know you hate to go here, mm-hmm. but the negative campaigning works. Mm-hmm. That's why we do it. Mm-hmm. And they end up taking on a different persona mm-hmm. than you imagine. Mm-hmm.
Well, we tell them they have to sleep at night. You know, they have to know who they are and really tune in to morally who they are and ultimately what kind of candidate they want to be. And this is something I used to have conversations with Chris Shays about this all the time. And he would say, you know, I sleep at night. This is my moral compass. And I'm okay with my stand on issues and how the way in which I'm conducting myself. And all we can do is provide that training, that environment, and then what they choose to do when they fly and they're launched is up to them.
I know that you train women for the political fight, mm-hmm. but do you think that these men who are now at a different place because society is shifting, this last election has meant a lot to a lot of people who never thought they'd get involved, do they know what they're in for?
I believe that the ones that have a level of consciousness do know what they're in for. The ones that don't are in for a very rude awakening, Larry.
What are you predicting will happen in 2018
and perhaps
2020?
I think women are going to be the story of the 2000 midterm elections. I've been saying that for months now. They're just going to be the story.
Who are these women? Are we talking about some of the white suburban women who have really seen a lot of things go on that offend them? Because I think the majority of white women back in 2016 actually did vote for Donald Trump.
Who
is moving away from him?
We do see white suburban women moving away from Donald Trump, but I think the real story is going to be women of color. That's a really exciting story here for me.
Organizational skills, their ability to put a lot of ideas together or be passionate? Because I know they were very important in Virginia,
yes.
New Jersey, and
yes.
Alabama recently.
Well, you know, women of color are just more comfortable taking risks. They are. They're risk takers. I mean, they just are. You know, we started to see a major, amazing shift of women of color applying to our school back in 2007. And that was, again, right during the Obama phenomenon. That's what I like to call it. Where women of color were in leadership roles, campaign roles, loved it. And it was like, wow, maybe I should think about running for office, or maybe I should think about a career in campaign management. And that's when we started to see the major increase in women of color attending our school. So back 23 years ago, the median age for women coming to our school, 40, 42, and predominantly white women, you know, women who had kind of launched their children and were now saying, okay, this is my time. Now, the median age is 29, 30, and the majority of the women who attend our school are women of color.
And what about being single today? You talked about the woman who said, I don't have a family, and mm-hmm. that used to be mm-hmm. the old trope. Mm-hmm. Everybody had to show their mm-hmm. family. Mm-hmm. Is that now out the window?
That's now something, again, it's creating an ability to be comfortable in who you are and sharing that with the world. So if you're a gay and lesbian couple, if you're, you know, not married.
Transgender,
exactly. You know, they're owning it and they're proud of it. And so as a result of that, when you know who you are, you can be a very, very effective, successful candidate.
Patricia Russo, again, the executive director of the Women's Campaign School at Yale University. What similar type programs have you spawned? Because I think there are many starting to burgeon around the country.
There are many. And that's the good news. You know, if you Google women's campaign schools, you can be on your computer for quite a while. There are campaign schools that train younger women, say teenagers. There is a group called Live Girl that is working with middle school age girls, which is phenomenal in the area of leadership, self-confidence, self-esteem. There are schools that provide online training. So there is just kind of a panoply out there of different options so that if you are not ready for our 5-day intensive, if you cannot, for whatever reason, attend our 1-day training, there are other options for you, which is so wonderful. And many of these other campaign schools are actually a feeder for our 5-day. So there are other schools out there that are providing training. And ultimately, all of those women, many of those women, ultimately apply to our 5-day. Our 5-day is very comprehensive.
You know, the white supremacists in Charlottesville, Virginia, they were chanting, "You will not replace us." So I want to ask you, is the battle cry for these women, in fact, we are ready to take our place, or we've waited too long? What is the battle cry?
It's our time. It's our time. It's our moment. I think that that's it more than anything. And love over hate, solutions over whining, that's what women bring to the table.
Well, thank you for coming to the table today on America Trends. Patricia Russo, Executive Director of the Women's Campaign School at Yale. Anything you'd like to say in closing?
Just if you're thinking about running, if you're thinking maybe this is my time, call us, 203-734-7385. I'd love to talk to you.
Thank you so much.
Thank you, Lair.
All right.